originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is, of course, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer or mobile device at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer, you know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are with you once again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and ready to roll for the next hour, JT, with another trainer who is just getting started with his training career.
Yeah, it's very exciting that he's getting in the game. And as I was telling you before we started the broadcast, I used to make charts of his dad training at Ellis Park back in 1978 when we were both a lot younger.
Yeah. That does go back just a little ways. He is the son of trainer Rick Hiles. He is a 39-year-old native of Franklin, Kentucky. His name is Jeff Hiles, and yeah, he's our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Jeff, appreciate the visit.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. You know, you just went out on your own. You've only had one starter. This was announced just a couple of weeks ago. Spent a lot of time working with trainer Kenny McPeak before you decided to make this leap. You learned from your dad, I'm sure, at some point as you were growing up. You've always been around horses. Take us back through this little process. What led to the decision to finally say, okay, I'm ready to make this move. I'm going to go out on my own.
It's always been a dream. Ever since I was a kid, you know, my first dream in life was to be a jockey, and I grew that when I was about 9 years old. So, you know, I've always wanted to do it. It's just I wasn't ready mentally, I guess, for the seven-day-a-week work life until now. I mean, with Kenny, I've been with him for the last 4 years, and I just thought it was time to get with him. And when I took out my trainer's license in 2014, and I thought, you know, I'll just claim a few horses and get going that way, but realized real quick I didn't know as much as I thought I did. So I called Kenny up and asked him for an opportunity, and he said, sure, come on. You know, we've got a bunch of two-year-olds coming in at Keeneland, and we'll put you to work. So I started at the bottom and just worked my way up. And I talked to him about a year ago about doing my own thing. It was last spring in 2017, and he said, look, just give me a little bit more time. And I did, and I've really enjoyed working for Kenny. You know, we've got a lot of good horses. And being around those horses and deciding to move on out, it's been a rough part because I'm not going to start off the stake horse. I mean, look, Friday night we won the Miss Revere with Princess Warrior. Saturday we won the Jockey Club, or the Jockey Club with Signal Man, Restless Rider. Finished second, got beat ahead. I mean, I've got, look down my shed row there while working for Kenny. I've got graded stakes winners lined up, and now it's going to claiming horses. But I just felt that it was time, and him and I had talked back over the summer, and you know, he was on board with it, and I told him about, I don't know, it's been a little over a month ago that I wasn't going to go with him to Florida, and we talked about, you know, some deeper stuff, and I just felt like now's the time. I've got a good group of owners that are behind me. They've pushed me, and it hasn't been an easy decision, though. I mean, you know, a few weeks ago we had our exercise rider, you know, he got killed on the track, and after that it was even, do I really want to do this? And one of my owners, Mickey, he kept pushing me. He said, listen, you need to get a horse, you know, to get you through this. And so we got one, and as you know, as you just said, I had my first start here a week ago and got my butt handed to me, but that's okay. So we're just rolling with the punches, and I just felt now's the time to do it, so we're doing it.
Yeah, it is kind of a culture shock to go from being in those Saturday races, so to speak, the bigger races every weekend, and then you know, find out that most of the horses that you have are going to be running on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So, you know, and I totally can relate to that. I mean, Thursday was my favorite day at the track. I won more races on Thursday than probably any other trainer. But, you know, it'll turn around for you. I mean, you know what you're doing, and you know, you've got a tremendous background. And so it just takes some time, you know, and it's good that you got owners that are excited about you and trying to push you. That really helps. If you've got people in your corner, because a lot of times when trainers start out, they don't have that. They you know, they're kind of doing it either with their own horse or a family horse or grasping for straws. But if you get some people that are gonna support you and believe in you, that's that you're halfway home.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a tremendous support. I've got so much support going around me. I'm just overwhelmed with all the support and people that are stepping up to help me out. Even my dad, you know, I was kind of telling him, listen, he's told me, stay where you're at. You know, it's a good job working skinny. I said, look, this is my dream. This is my passion. I'm ready to do this, and I'm going to do it. So he finally got behind me, and he's helping me out a lot right now. I've got our horses combined together, and we're going to go to Oakland together and just build from there. So
how many horses do you have right now, Jeff?
I've just got two horses, but I've got, and I say that, you know, you don't think you can make it with two, but I've got a lot of money behind me, and I'm looking for horses. I just haven't found anything that I want, and I'm not going to just go out there and just claim horses just to be having horses. I'm going to buy quality horses that's going to produce. I'm not looking for the numbers.
Yeah, it sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me as if that's going to be the game plan to kind of kickstart your career. You'll claim some horses, get them to the races quickly afterwards, try to generate some income and some victories and get your name out there, and then maybe at some point look at going to the sales, or will you make that plunge a little bit earlier than what I'm anticipating?
No, the sales will be worked all next year. I mean,
okay.
We've got guys who are wanting yearlings, 2-year-olds in training, whatever it may be. And so starting at the beginning of the year, you know, I think one of our first sales will be the one down at Gulfstream Park, 2-year-old in training sale. So we'll go from there and just work every single sale as hard as we can.
You know, the obvious question here would be, what things have you learned from Kenny on the training side? But let's take a step back. I'll get to that in a minute. What things did you learn from being around Ken McPeak at the horse sales? I'm sure you spent a little bit of time with him there and looking at horses. What are things that you picked up on that Kenny does well to select these young horses?
Kenny has a deep process, and I haven't spent a lot of time with him at the sales, very little to be honest, because I've run Kenny's main string of horses for the last, you know, 3+ years, and it's very demanding when you have 36 horses there that you've got that you're constantly in control of. So I didn't take a lot of time to go to the sales with him. But I do know that his process. He's got a good team of people that help him, that, you know, break down all the horses, get a short list. And that's Kenny's, you know, he's told me that, listen, this is my passion. I love buying horses, and he's got a very good group of people that help him do what he does. So I think, you know, with anything, it's about getting the right group of people together, you know, even in the barn or going to the sales and narrowing down your horses, looking at what you're wanting to spend and going through your horses from top to bottom and being selective on what you're picking out.
Yeah, you got to have some help, especially at some of these sales that have, you know, thick catalogs. You can't look at every horse yourself, and nor do you want to, because they all start to look the same after a while. So it helps if you got some good short listers and you know, people that you trust and know what they're doing, and then you can fine tune from there. It makes a big difference. But Kenny's really got a great knack for selecting the right horses, and I think Signal Man is a tribute to that for sure.
Yeah, Signal Man, General Quarters, you don't see too many of them that are out there really running like he is. But I mean, you look at the horse, it's hard not to like him. He's big, good-looking two-year-old. I mean, I can imagine what he's going to look like come February or March. As you know, between two and three, you can, the big horses, you can almost physically watch them grow. It seems like every day they change and get bigger and bigger. So, I mean, Sigma Man, yeah, he's a $32,000 purchase. And, I mean, look, now he's a Derby contender, maybe.
Yeah, I bet you Kenny wishes the Derby was, like, in January.
Yeah. Well, you know, his plan for him is, I think he's actually leaving Churchill today and going to Payson Park, which is a horse heaven, and getting a little time off. I was there a couple years ago, and I'd say when I get a good string of horses built up in some, you know, a little better quality, it's a great place to be. It really is.
Talking with trainer Jeff Hiles here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jeff, just getting started with his career, as we've been talking about, he spent a lot of time working with trainer Ken McPeak, decided a few weeks ago, hey, it's my time. I want to do this. I want to fulfill my dream. I want to go out on my own. And he is doing that. He's had one starter so far, the first of many for trainer Jeff Hiles yet to come. Jeff, I mentioned earlier that, you know, you probably learned a lot on the training side from Kenny. So what are some of the things you took away from working with him that you're going to employ in your operation going forward?
You know, the organization of it, but I've got that from the Marines. I mean, I spent 5 years organizing people in the Marines, 18, 19, 20-year-old young guys with loaded weapons running around, full of testosterone. So it kind of I've run our barn the same way that I did in the military. Kenny has his system set up the same way. As far as, I mean, there's so much stuff that goes into the routine. And Kenny kind of put me to the fire that's the way that I learned best. But, you know, we had our assistant quit on us. I think I'd been with Kenny for 6 or 8 months at the time. And I was his foreman. And I don't know what happened, but he ended up quitting. And Kenny walked in the barn and said, well, are you ready? And I said, I guess I am. I'm going to have to be. And he turned a string of horses over to me, and I just pretty much ran with it and learned and paid attention to the horses. And, I mean, that's I learned by doing.
Yeah, that's the best way to learn anyway, I think, in the horse business. It's easy to, you know, to learn the book stuff and all of that, but man, every day there's something new with the horses, and I mean, you never stop learning from the day you take your trainer's license out, you know, until the day you die. There's something new every day.
It's a very humbling business when you think you've got it all figured out. it will show you real quick that you don't.
0-42. When you think you have it all figured out, 0-42 is right around the corner.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But, you know, I think every trainer goes through this, though, Jeff, right? I mean, when they're starting out, we had Bill Mott on the program. We tell this story all the time that there was a time when Bill Mott couldn't get stalls at Centennial Park because his horses weren't good enough. And then years later, he looks down the shed row, much like you did with Kenny, and there's grade 1 winner, grade 2 winner, great champion. You know, so it's just every trainer, I think, goes through this as they get started. And we often lose focus of that when we see these trainers and all the success that they have currently.
Yeah, it's gonna come. I mean, you just gotta work hard. And being with someone like Kenny starting out, I told him, you know, the other night we were standing in the paddock. He looked at me and said, "Well, I guess this is it for you. It's your time." And I told him, "Kenny, you know, I couldn't have sat down and asked God to give me a better opportunity than what I've had, than what I was looking for, than working for him. I mean, he's such good horses." And I carried 36 horses at Churchill from April until now, and that was every year. So I got exposed to a lot more problems by going that way than, like I said earlier, starting out on my own, going and claiming a horse, and, you know, trying to figure things out. This has been, I couldn't even if things were going that I wanted to, which happened a lot. Or how I might have planned them. It always worked out to my benefit, and it always has, especially ever since I started back on. But I really started hitting it and saying, this is now's the time. Go get it. And it's really worked out good for me.
Talking with Jeff Hiles here on Trainer Talk, presented by Faze at Tipton here on HRR. And Jeff, think about some of those horses you were around with Kenny. You mentioned some of the really good ones, but are there a couple that stand out to you for whatever reason?
Rated R Superstar, Dothraki Queen. Those were, I had them for material. We just lost Rated R in a 62.5 claiming race the other day, and I hated it because he's probably hands down my favorite horse of all time from every horse that I've ever been around. He's a very particular horse. He's almost so crazy. You got to know exactly what you're doing with him in order to get in the stall with him and put the bridle on him and lead him over. And I mean, he has been definitely one of my favorite horses. Dothraki Queen, who finished third in the Breeders' Cup a couple years ago, she finished second in Alcibiades. She was a big one that come up. They were both the same age, 2-year-olds when I first started with Kenny. Daddy's Little Darling, I had at Payson Park and prepped her for the Ash, and you know, took her to the shock Chicago this past summer when she went up there. I mean, they could go on and on and on. Golden Ticket was one. He was a $1 million earner when I first started that he still had. There's been, I mean, just countless horses that he has that just come through his system. Even the ones that aren't greatest stakes winners are, you know, the grandpa knows best. He's one that's still there now. You get to working with these horses constantly, and you get to know them. Princess Warrior, she's peculiar, you know. When I had her first time out, she closed into a 110 pace. She finished second in the Alcibiades, I think behind Heavenly Love last year. And then when she left, it's like she fell off. And then he took her to Florida, and she really didn't have that kick. And, you know, I got her back and started doing really good again. And here she is. She won to Miss Revere the other night. So There's horses that are really, really good horses, even horses that are claimers, they stick with you. Grandpa knows best, like I just said, he's a really neat horse. But hands down, Rated R Superstar is my favorite of all time.
Well, you know, as you go through that list and I think of Kenny and like the interviews we've done with him and the thought process that he puts into every horse as far as their schedule is concerned and where he wants to run them and where he'd like them to go. His thought process is really solid. I mean, he really has a concept of what each horse in his mind should be doing. And he kind of follows that path. Do you find yourself doing it the same way?
Well, as you know, a lot of times it works out for you really good. It's great. A lot of times it backfires on you, too. I mean, sometimes that's part of this game, why it's so humbling. Sometimes you think you're making all the right decisions and the horse comes out and doesn't do anything. Look, you shipped Princess Warrior over to me at Oakland this past winter to run my mind just went blank. Anyway, in the prep for the Kentucky Oaks, and she finished dead last. I mean, well, then he had to go back and regroup and figure something else out with her. And he did. He's done great by doing that. But, yes, I mean, I hope that I have the same success that he's had and all the trainers, you know.
Jeff, were you at the Travers with Golden Ticket when he dead-heated with Alpha?
No, I wasn't. But this winter I was with David Cohen, who wrote him, and I heard the story probably 4 or 5 times between him and his agent, Billy.
Where'd you watch the race? You had to be cheering for him. It was a horse you liked. You had to be really rooting for him, right? Where'd you watch the race?
When he ran in the Travers, I wasn't with Kenny.
Okay.
He was actually before me. I got Golden Ticket right before he was getting ready to retire. He was doing really good and getting ready to run another race, and they just kind of said, okay, well, we're ready to retire. And I don't know what the reasoning was behind that, and there might be, there's some reason, but. So I was only with Golden Ticket for probably 6 months. But, you know, David and they told me, you know, go back and watch your replay because it's a good ride. David came up the rail, and you can go back and watch a replay and actually see where it's a little, like, I don't know if it's a smoke or what comes off that rail. When he comes through that rail, the hole is so tight that he hits the rail and it kind of, you can see it. That's how tight it is when he comes through, and they got up there to win the race, or did he?
The smoke or the dust or
something.
Real skimming ride.
Yeah, it was a pretty good ride. And I'm a big fan of David Cohen. He's an aggressive rider anyway, and he's just, like, you know, coming back. And I was wanting to use him a little bit more. And speaking of signal, man, you know, David broke his maiden up in at Saratoga this winter or this summer. So,
what makes him so good?
I think I like an aggressive rider. I don't think that he fits every horse by any means, but I like him. You know, he is a very aggressive rider, and it seems like he gets the most out of the horse.
You know, that's an interesting point, Jeff. You say fits. He doesn't fit every horse necessarily. He's more of an aggressive rider. That's one thing that gets overlooked with trainers, and one of the roles that they have, one of the responsibilities they have is finding the right rider for a particular horse. And that's really part of what makes a trainer so successful, isn't it?
And placement of your horse. I mean, the filly I just ran my first time out, I didn't think that, I mean, I just doubled her in price, but my reasoning for running her wasn't because I thought that she was going to run a race. I thought that she might have had a shot. I mean, she won her maiden by 7 lengths, maiden 15. I put her in a 39 winners of two. I thought she would hit the board, which she didn't. But I know where the faults are, but the reason I was running her back so fast, I ran her back in 11 days, which for a small filly like that, you normally don't want to do, but we're coming to the end of the meet. So I've got 2 months between Churchill and Oakland. Now we're going to be running at Turfway for a third of the money. I think she's going to run back on the 12th in the same race, but instead of running for $29,000, we're running for $10,000. So that's why I ran her back there. So I think it's placement of the horse. So much goes into it that is unseen. It's breezing them however many days out. Each horse is different. The little fillies, I don't like breezing four or five. You know, there's a theory out there, 3-4-5, 3-3-8, 4-half, 5-5-8 works 5 days out. You know, I think every horse is different, and that's part of figuring it out and placing them in the right spots. One thing like Brad Cox is so good at doing, he places his horses in the right spots where they can win, finding the right rider that fits your horse. And every rider does not fit every horse. I think Channing Hill's a good rider, but I don't think that he fits every horse that we've had. So,
yeah, that's always a question, you know, and sometimes you have to deal with your clients. They like a particular rider or they don't like a particular rider and you'd like to use them. So it's a fine line you have to walk sometimes. I think one of David Cohen's strengths is he's a good handicapper. His father, I was well acquainted with his father in California. His father was an excellent handicapper and a big bettor, and I'm sure David learned how to read the racing form before he read any books for book reports. I mean, he probably knew the form better than anybody, but I think that's one of his strengths. I mean, you see him, he'll be in a race with no pace in it, he goes right to the lead, you know.
Yeah.
There'll be a race with a whole bunch of horses and he might just take it easy, pretend he's Eddie Delahoussaye for a couple minutes, you know. So yeah. I think that's a big edge that he has that a lot of other riders don't.
Yeah, he's experienced, and I like David a lot. He seems like a good person. But you know, finding a jockey, a lot of people will tell you those jocks don't matter. You know, this and that. They're just on the horse. Look, and a good horse makes everybody look good. But my goal is to find the right combination that's going to get the most out of your horse at that time of the race.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense too. Jeff Hiles here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Jeff, if you were going to put your finger, and I'm sure you've done some of this in your thought process as you've kind of thought about going out on your own, but if you were going to put your finger on the one or the two qualities that make for a successful horse trainer, what would those qualities be?
Knowing your horse. Knowing what they can do. I mean, where you're going to put them. It's just, you know, what we just talked about. This placement of your horse, knowing how good they are, not putting them in over their head, putting them in where they can win, not being scared to lose a horse. You know, a lot of people will run their horses over their head because they don't want to lose them. They're playing the numbers game. I'm not worried about that. I can go out of business when I run these next two horses because they're going to be in claiming races. I want to win races. That's what my goal is. That's what my owners want. Look, some of these guys out here, they have all the money in the world. They don't care about how much it costs to own a racehorse. They want to win races. So that's my goal, is to get people into the business that want to do good, that want to win races and be able to do that for them. And also keep a positive budget as we're going along.
Yeah, you got to keep them in the game.
That's right. And, bring people in. That's one thing, a good quality about Kenny. We were talking about Kenny. He knows how to go out and get people and bring them into the game and buy racehorses for them.
Yeah, but you got to get the right people too, right? You got to get people that are on board with your philosophy so that you can move forward and reach those goals together, right?
Well, I mean, look, you don't want to go out and work for somebody that you're not going to get along with. Yep. I'm in this to have a good time and get good people around me and support me and always be with me. I've got that right now. I've got a guy from Arkansas that I've known who's actually a client of Kenny's. Who he left Kenny and he found out I was coming out on my own. And he called me up and said, "Here, climb the horse for me." So he's a really good guy. I want to be around good people, good positive people who are not just in horse racing, but who are nice to be around just in general.
Yeah, I think we're two or three minutes away from our commercial break here, Jeff. But take me through the process that you go through when you're looking at claiming these horses for your clients. How do you go about it?
Watch them run. I watch their strides. I go back and watch replays, countless replays of the races previously to them running. I look at them in the paddock. I look at them as they're walking over, handicap. You can find a diamond in the rough. My dad had a Billy E claim for $7,500 a couple years ago, and we were looking at why in the world did he claim this horse? But I hadn't really looked at her, but he ended up making $250,000 over the last few years. So it's constant. I mean, in my family's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm reading the form, studying the form, going back watching replays." And I got to do it. I mean, you got to put the groundwork in. It's all about groundwork. Go get it. Go find them. Go get them and get them in your barn.
Yeah, you can learn a lot by just checking legs every day, going down and to the paddock and watching the horses. And every once in a while, one will catch your eye, or you'll think, "Oh, this horse looks like he might enjoy the turf or whatever." Those are things that are invaluable. But you got to be there. You got to put in the time.
You got to be there. You got to put the groundwork in. And I mean, especially with these less expensive horses. Some of the other horses that are $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, you can look at on paper, but you need to look closely to them too. These are less expensive horses, $8,000, $5,000, $8,000, $10,000. You better be looking at them because you can get a bad horse real quick.
Yeah, he's trainer Jeff Hiles. He's our guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. We're going to step away for a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about his time serving our country in the Marines, and we'll talk about growing up as the son of a horse trainer, the son of Rick Hiles. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Nominate now to the 2019 Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FasicTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, all presented by our friends at Fasic Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us. If you missed any portion of our visit with our special guest tonight, that is trainer Jeff Hiles. All you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to a podcast of this show and all of our programming right there on our website, horseracingradio.net. And don't forget to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. JT, some cool stories that Jeff was able to tell us in the first half of the show, being around Ken McPeak, learning from Ken McPeak, now going out on his own. One of the things that stood out to me, and we'll get back to Jeff here in just a moment, was the fact that he took out his trainer's license, then realized years ago that, hey, you know what? I still have a lot more to learn, and went to work for a guy like Ken McPeak, paid his dues, learned from the ground up, and here he is launching his career again, and it seems like he's on the right track.
Yeah, well, that happens to a lot of people. I remember doing a trainer talk with Chuck Simon, and he said he thought he knew a lot about horses.
Yeah.
And then he went to work for Alan Jerkins and found out he didn't know anything. So, you know, and Chuck's had a great career. So you know, it happens. You think sometimes that you've got a grasp of what's going on, but like I said earlier, you're learning every day. I mean, sometimes you learn from conversations with other trainers. Sometimes you learn by watching what they do when you're stable next to them, and then the horses teach you a lot daily on a daily basis. So, I could totally relate to that.
Well, as we told you, Jeff grew up in Franklin, Kentucky, 39 years old. He is the son of trainer Rick Hiles, who has trained for more than 40 years, has won a few great stakes races in those 40 years and had some pretty nice horses. So Jeff knows a thing or two about being around a good horse. But the one part of his story that can't be overlooked, and he mentioned it in the first half of the show, Jeff served in the Marines for 5 years beginning in 2001. So Jeff, before we go any further, first and foremost, thank you for your service to our country. Really appreciate it, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tell me about that decision to go into the Marines.
Well, I was 21 at the time, and I had gotten in a little bit of trouble, nothing bad, but I was living on campus at University of Kentucky, and we were coming up to the last days of the semester, and we all had to be out of our house. Anyway, step back. I was going to join the Navy and I wanted to be a Navy SEAL, and it didn't quite work out. So the Navy recruiter said, "Hey, listen, are you still interested in joining the Marines?" So I'd been down the road of going to the Marines previously, and I said, "No, you know, I'm really not." He said, "Well, I think that they'd like to have you, and they can get you in if you really want to do it." I said, "Well, have the recruiter call me." And like I said, I had a couple days left of college in my last semester there, and we had to be out of our house. We lived right on campus, Columbia Avenue, like walking distance from Commonwealth Stadium. And he called me up. He said, "Listen, you know, I'd like to talk to you about joining the Marines. We got 3 drill instructors coming in to Fort Knox. They're going to do all of our people going to boot camp. They're going to give them a little taste of boot camp before they go." He said, "Would you be interested in going down there and staying the night?" And I had to be out of my house on Friday. On that Friday, it was like May the 4th or 3rd or something like that. And I said, "Sure, why not?" I didn't really have a place to go besides back home to my mom's house in Frankfort. And so I went to Fort Knox, and we got down there that night, and those 3 drill instructors come in, and they pretty much kicked our ass. I don't know if I can say that on the thing. They kicked our butt, okay? And they were screaming and yelling and throwing stuff. And that night I laid down. I thought, who in the hell would want to go through this for 3 months? And I woke up the next morning, and they come in screaming and yelling at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm a college student. I didn't get up until 9 or 10. And, you know, after we ate that morning, I thought, again, why would I do this to myself? And we got out. We got into the drills and messing with the rifle a little bit. And by noon that day, I said, "Sign me up. I'm ready to go." It was kind of a lengthy process. And like you said, in 2001, I always wanted to be in the military. There's 2 things I wanted to do in life. One was be in the military. The other was train horses. And I wasn't ready to do the horse thing yet. And I knew that. I hadn't got the partying out of my system, which I guess people still do it. But I knew that if I wanted to do this, I wanted to give it 100%. I didn't want to halfway do something. So I waited on doing the horses. But I went to boot camp, and I always said, "I'm going to join the military. We're going to go to war." And sure enough, my 9th week of boot camp was like the hardest week of Marine Corps boot camp. you march out to a different area of the camp, of the base, and you're doing all this low crawl through sand. And, I mean, it's just stuff you just don't really want to do. And they pulled us all together, and they said, look, you are out here messing around, not giving this a hard, you know, not doing the best you can. He said, your country just got bombed, and trade centers in New York just got bombed, and we're going to war. And everybody thought they were joking, but that's kind of how my Marine Corps career started off. We went to war as soon as I joined. Fortunately, I never had to go, but that's what led up to the decision, and then that was the first part of my career there.
Yeah, well, that'll wake you up real quick, right?
Yeah, well, tons of thoughts and concerns, and I mean, we didn't get to see a TV. I didn't see none of it until I got out of boot camp, which was another 13 weeks long, so it was another 5 weeks before any of us saw any pictures of anything. So it was, we just thought, I mean, everything went on lockdown, things completely changed the last 5 weeks of boot camp, and we're in boot camp. So we think that we're the first ones to go during the whole time, which it wasn't the case, though. What we thought, it was completely the total opposite, which normally sometimes it is. You know, things never seem to go as you think they're going to go. That always works out some way else. But it was definitely an experience.
Yeah, I can imagine that would knock that partying streak right out of you pretty quick, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, what's funny is I didn't learn how to really drink good until I joined the Marines.
So everything we hear about the Marines is true.
Oh, and some. Well, you don't hear everything. It's a fraternity of brothers, and I still keep in contact with some of the guys who I was in. And I've been out for since 2000. I got out early 2006, so it's been 12 years, and we're still in contact. And every saying that you see about going back to your friends, and there's nobody quite like them in the Marines. Like I always thought, you know, your high school friends, you stay around, but you find real quick everybody disperses out of high school and goes in completely different directions. But my Marine buddies, it's something I can't explain. The camaraderie that is between us is just, it's totally different.
Yeah, you know, and it seems to extend forever. You know, Mr. Bassett from Keeneland, he was a Marine, and I believe Tom Bullitt was in the Marines at the same time, and they've been friends all these years. And it's amazing when those guys get together. I remember my father was in the Army, and he was actually stationed at Fort Knox for a while during World War II, and his Army buddies and him, they would get together every once in a while, and they were spread all over the country, but they'd find a place where they were all going to be, or people would ship in and spend some time together. So it's a lifelong fraternity, as you say.
It is, and for any 18-year-old kid coming out of high school and you don't know which direction you want to go in life, I highly recommend it, because the experiences that you get are invaluable and you will never forget them.
Are any of your Marine comrades involved in horse racing at all?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I know of. And I'm sure that I would know about it. Most of them have. I mean, one of my buddies is working on an oil rig out in West Texas. Another one's up in Massachusetts. Another one's back in. He became an officer. And, you know, a few other ones are here and there. But none of them have anything to do with horses.
And then even after you got out of the Marines, you didn't go right back to horse racing, right? You had a couple of other jobs that you were doing.
Yes, I started a construction business in 2007 and had a lot of rental property. Starting that construction business is really what made me go through the way that I did things with working for Kenny and the big outfit. Because I started the construction business, and I really didn't know what I was doing. I had a partner who knew all the remodeling stuff, and he was supposed to be working with me, and we didn't have a falling out, but he just kind of backed out of the deal, and I had to learn a lot of stuff really quick. And it was really more expensive for myself to do it that way, because you're constantly messing up and constantly having to fix things, go back, and I didn't want to do the horse. Like I said, the horses, that I wanted to do them all. I wanted to do it the right way and make sure that I have a solid foundation to build off of. So the construction business actually taught me, look, don't do this way. Go about it. Get in there and be humble about yourself, and don't think you know everything, and listen and learn, and you know, you'll pick it up. And like you said earlier, you never learn too much in horses. You're always learning. My dad can tell you that. He's been doing this for 50 years almost. You always learn something.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's sort of hard to have to humble yourself to go back to doing things that you know how to do, but it's part of it to learn that aspect of the game, the humbleness that we talked about earlier. You know, when you think you've got it figured out, yeah, you're going on your 0 for 42 streak. And and that's and you always laugh at that.
I'm not sitting here thanking God.
He's only 0 for 1.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend who started out his career, and he's a pretty good trainer. I'm not going to mention any names because he hates the 0 for 78 thing. But he didn't win with his first 78 starters. And later,
we might have the same friend because I know a guy who did that as well.
Yeah, and later on, you know, he became a leading trainer at some meets. So, but you know, it's just one of those things that you cannot go around on your high horse, so to speak, all the time and think you know everything in this game, because even the guys at the very top go through some bad stretches sometimes.
So. It is. It does change. You know, I watched people won't win a race for a while. You're going to have your bad times. And these people who get out here and get cocky, I just kind of look at it like, it's coming. You wait.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Hopefully the good times outweigh the bad ones.
Trainer Jeff Hiles here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jeff, we touched on your dad a little bit. I mentioned his greatest stakes winners. He's trained 638 winners to date. He's been training, as you said, nearly 5 decades, has a ton of experience. You said you've learned a little bit from him, as well as trainer Ken McPeak. Your dad was also in the military, wasn't he?
He was in the Air Force.
Yeah. Does that count?
Sure.
Hey, I'm talking to a Marine here, so that was a legitimate question.
Yeah, you know, any service, of course. If you're willing to go serve our country and stand up for what our country's about, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no doubt about it. So your dad, growing up, we're kind of working backwards here a little bit, but growing up in Franklin, around your dad and his operation, tell me about that. Is that what kind of got you hooked and said, yeah, this is something I'd kind of like to do someday?
Yeah, I actually grew up in Frankfort, which is Franklin's down on the border. Not that it really matters, but Frankfort's the capital. And
got it.
He grew up in Frankfort, and I grew up there until I was in high school, and I moved to Louisville with him when I was in high school. And summers I would be out there walking horses and doing whatever was needed around the barn. But, you know, I remember as just a small kid, I wanted to be a jockey. I had the whole get up. I had the helmet. I had the whip. My mom would sit there and I'd ride a pillow in the living room. My mom would sit there and call the races for me while I was beating on the floor with my whip. So a big old stack of goggles. I remember Daryl Foster gave me a pair of jockey boots that I wore. And from day one, I was born into horse racing, and that it's just in your blood. I can't, you know, you can't explain it. It's just there. So it's always been a calling of mine. It's always been a passion. It's always been what I knew that I was eventually going to do at some point. So I remember getting up, I don't know what age, but I'm sitting there waiting on my dad to get up and go to the barn. We lived in Frankfort, so no matter whether we were going to Latonia, which is Turfway, or to Churchill Downs, it's still an hour and 15 minutes away from the house. So he'd be up at 3:30, 3 o'clock in the morning going to the horses, or Keeneland, which is just 20 minutes down the road. But the point of the story is I remember getting up and having such a desire to come to the barn and be around the horses that me and my sister would be sitting there waiting for him at the top of the steps, because he would try and sneak out of the house and not wake us up, so he would have to take us with him. Yeah. So we would, you know, sit there at the top of the stairs and wait for him to go back, and I'd go with you, and of course he'd always take us. So it's just, even, you know, in high school, I mean, I remember adolescence, and I had some problems going on, and I would just go out and sit with the horses. They've been such a serenity for me, and horses just have something about them that click with me anyway, you know.
Did you miss them when you were in the military?
Yes, yes. I had it all planned out. I was going to get out of the military. I had just gotten married, and I just had a newborn. I was coming home. I had X amount of dollars saved up. I was going to claim a horse at Churchill. I was going to get into the horse business right then, and I was going. That was my reasoning for getting out of the military. This is what I wanted to do. I was 25, 26 years old, and I was going to claim a horse at Churchill, running at Ellis Park, and try to build from there. Didn't quite work out that way, but that's constantly. I remember my dad had a horse in the Florida Derby in 2003, Midway Cat, I think was his name. And me and all my buddies, we sit there in our barracks and watched him down at Gulfstream Park, watched the horse run. Of course, it was a bad race, but, you know, that was always a passion, always. And my staff sergeant, his daughter had a farm, or she went out and rode on a farm out there in Hawaii where I was stationed at. So there was a couple times I went out with him to the farm just to be around the horses.
Stationed in Hawaii? That doesn't sound like a bad gig.
It was, I can't even put into words how awesome it was.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a pretty special place to be if you're going to be stationed anywhere. Hawaii would certainly work. Your dad's four greatest stakes winners. He actually had three horses win greatest stakes. One of those horses won two. Sandare, who won the Grade 3 Honey Fox and the Grade 3 The Very One handicap in 2003 down at Gulfstream Park. But he had Midway Magistrate, and he had Foolish Intent, who was his first ever greatest stakes winner. The Omaha Gold Cup, a Grade 3 back in 1988. You remember any of those moments at all, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. Foolish Intent's a big memory. He was like the pet of the barn. My dad kept that horse forever. I remember when we lost him. He finally went into a claiming race, and we lost him. I cried and cried because he was like a barn favorite. Sandare, I wasn't really around all that much, but I didn't like watching her races because she would come from way out of it, and it was like a nail biter every single time. Midway Magistrate, I was around, even when the Ben Ali, which is exactly the same race that Rated R just won this past spring, the horse I was telling you about, Rated R Superstar, he won the Ben Ali as well over at Keeneland. So, yeah, I remember all of them. What's funny, though, is Midway Magistrate, he actually claimed off Kenny.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Any discussions about that around the campfire?
Well, not with Kitty, but my dad always throws it in the face.
How much will you rely on your dad's input now as you're kind of getting started? How much do you guys have a conversation about training horses?
Well, we don't do things exactly the same, but my dad's experience is invaluable to me. He's been around forever. I mean, you can't sit back and say, oh, well, you're 50, you've been doing this for 50 years, I know more than you. That's not even close to the thing. I always listen, and I make my own decision, no matter who it is. So I'm always asking questions to all types of trainers, and not just my dad, but having him right there with me all the time. I mean, I can't explain to you how valuable that is for me, especially getting started.
Yeah, because there's always a bunch of questions when you first get started, and it is good to have somebody like that to bounce off of. I didn't have any family involved in the business. I was the first one in my family to take the shot. But Jay Robbins was stable next to me, and he was a great sounding board for me. And a lot of times I'd talk to Jay in the mornings about certain things. I wish I had paid more attention to the business side. Jay was an excellent businessman as far as running his stable was concerned. And I wish I would have paid more attention to that, but I had so many questions about the horses that we never really got much into that. But it was great to have somebody like that.
The business side, I have learned a lot from Kenny. I will say that I've watched how he runs his program, and I had access to everything that, you know, we have a computer system that we go through called T-Lore, and I use it now for my horses. But the billing and how things are input and stuff like that. So as far as the business side goes, I've learned a lot on that end from Kenny. And then the horsemanship side, my dad's had claiming horses a lot throughout the 50 years. As you mentioned, he's had some graded stake winners and some high-level claimers, allowance horses along the way as well. But that's when the real horsemanship comes into it, to play, is taking those horses that might not be completely 100% and getting the most out of them.
Yeah, and certainly Kenny is as good as anybody at doing that. And we're talking with his longtime assistant, Jeff Hiles, who is now out on his own. He's our guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Jeff, when you look at your future, and you talked about next year working the sales, and you talked about claiming horses this year and kind of getting things kickstarted that way. When you look at your future, what are some of the goals that you've set for yourself, maybe some of those shorter-term goals?
It's just being able to set a solid foundation. And just like with any business, this is a little different for myself because it's not like I'm going to work. It's like I'm going to life every morning when I get up. I've got to put 8 hours in the day. And I'm sure you got to love what you do. As far as short-term goes, I'm looking for that first stakes win. I've got a car that I drive now, so I'm not getting rid of this car, which it's on its last leg, and I'm not trading it in until I get that first stakes win. And, it's just small stuff like that, but I want the same thing, down the road, Derby wins and Breeders' Cup and stakes wins, greatest stakes wins. It's just like with anything, you want to be the best you can be, and I think that I will get there. I don't have a doubt at all that I'll make it. I've got a good group of people behind me. We're working hard to go get the right horses and make that dream come to life.
6 days ago, you saddled your first starter on your own, Say It Softly. Tell me about saddling Say It Softly and maybe, taking a look at that horse in the paddock thinking, okay, here we go. We're getting it started now.
It's so surreal because it's a dream that I've had my whole life that came true. And when you are able to accomplish your dreams, it's a different meaning than accomplishing goals. It's like goals times 10. But your goals are just as important to get you to that point. Now, I got my butt kicked the first race. I think she got beat by like 25 lengths. And I've ran her back, as I explained to you earlier, because I didn't really have a place to go with her. I ran her back too fast. It's probably, maybe you shouldn't have done it, but we paid half of her training bill for the month. And we're going to look for. We've already found the next race. We're going to go with her. She's a nice little filly, and it was very exciting. But to be honest, I was wanting to get it over with. That first start, I just wanted to get through it. Everything's safe, and just get it over with. Just like this first win, the 0-42. That's why I laugh about it. I want to get that first win out of the way, and then you can go on. It's sort of like that. It's almost haunting, that first win. It takes you forever to do it. It's just like, I'll use Greg Foley, for example. He was trying to hit 400 there at Churchill, and it's like he just couldn't win a race. And he finally got it, but it seemed like he had a bunch of stars before he got it. And same thing with his first win. I hope it's not going to be that way. I hope I'm fortunate enough to put these horses in the right spots and get that first win just knocked out behind me.
Yeah, we've done, I don't know, a couple hundred of these shows.
Yeah, at least.
At least. I've never heard a trainer say, I'm not going to work, I'm going to life. And that really, that's something that we talk about on this program a lot, that racing is a lifestyle. It's a way of being. It's not like a job. I mean, if it's a job, then you pick the wrong business. It's so tough. I mean, the 7 days a week is tough. The 24 hours a day is tough. But that's really nothing in the overall scheme of things. I mean, the tension and pressure that you're under all the time, and that is such a great way to view it. I actually wrote it down.
Well, good.
Yeah, great quote, and it is so true. How many trainers have we had on this program, and we ask them about other interests, other things they enjoy doing when they're away from the racetrack, and they pause for a little bit, and they'll say, geez, I don't know. This is my life. This is what I do. This is the only thing I want to do. Now, they may read books. They may do some work in the yard or something like that when they're off. But this is all they know. This is their life.
Yeah, most trainers are uncomfortable when they're not at the track.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, how about for you? Are there other things that you will do when you're not there? Do you follow other sports, anything like that?
I don't follow other. I wear a Yankees hat all the time. That's kind of what I'm known for around the track. But it's not because I'm just such a diehard Yankees fan. It's because, to me, the New York Yankees kind of represent America. I'm doing it because not really patriotism, but, I mean, it's because I love what the Yankees are, like America's team. New York, what happened on 9/11, that's why I wear my Yankees hat. It's not because I'm just such a diehard Yankees fan. I'll get people come up to me and say, did you see this? I was like, no, I didn't watch the game, man. Sorry. And I don't even watch TV hardly. I mean, Horse races, yes. Horse racing, for sure. That's my life. I'd like to work on our new house. We just bought a new house. I like fixing it up because I've got every tool you can think of from where I had my construction business. I've remodeled countless homes. I used to have tons of rental properties that were constant maintenance. So it's, I like making our house for my family the best that it can be and comfortable and nice. And I love spending time with my girlfriend right now and her son and my daughter. They're the same age, and the family life just really clicks. I like keeping them with me. I like being around the barn. That's what it is. I'm more into the training of the horse and running them than anything else. I mean, Kenny's passion is working the sales. You've got to have a combination of claiming horses, working the sales, all of it combined, I think, to really, really do the top thing. But that's the stuff I do. I like construction work. I like improving things. Now, one thing I do besides horse raising is I trade stocks a lot in the stock market. I'm really big into that. I read a lot. I like learning new things about life, about different ways to see stuff. I look at life as life's happening for me, not to me. So it's whatever's going on, whatever obstacle I'm facing, I do my best to take the why is this happening, just find something that's going on that's going to help me. So no matter what it is,
yep.
I enjoy doing all things in life. Well, one of my biggest passions is shooting. I was a primary marksmanship instructor in the Marines. I worked on a rifle range and taught Marines how to shoot the M16 and 9mm. That's a big passion. I don't do that very much, but that's pretty much life.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate the visit. Believe it or not, we're out of time, my friend, but thank you so much for being with us. Continued success. Let's get it going, huh?
Thank you very
much. All right, trainer Jeff Hiles with us on Trainer Talk. And our thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We're back next week.